Hello, and welcome to On Boards, a deep look at driving business success. Hi, my name is Joe Ayoub, and I'm here with my co-host, Raza Sheikh. Hey, Raza.
Hi, Joe. Happy to be here with you co-hosting.
Good to be with you. On Boards is about boards of directors and advisors and all aspects of board governance. Twice a month in 20 minutes, this is the place to learn about one of the most critically important aspects of any company or organization, its board of directors or advisors.
Joe and I speak with a wide range of guests and talk about what makes a board great, what makes a board unsuccessful, how to be a good board member, and how to make your board one of the most valuable assets for your company.
Our guest today has a breadth of experience as an executive and board director for technology companies, including medical technology, software, and financial services.
He is a nationally published thought leader who provides CEO and board advisory services for middle market technology companies. He has been a board member, a board chair, mentor, and coach to CEOs.
We're very excited to have Rick Williams as our guest today. Welcome, Rick. We're happy to have you as our guest on Boards.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Happy to engage in the conversation with you guys who I regard as experts in this field.
Thanks so much. I want to say to our listeners, for an overview of Rick's advisory practice and his nationally published thought leadership, please go to his website, which is Williams with an S, williamsadvisorypartners.com. So, Rick, I know you've written many, many articles and also have spoken frequently about boards and governance, but now you're writing a book entitled Create the Future for Your Company and Yourself, which I understand is due in September of next year.
My fingers are crossed, but that's what we're working towards.
Good, good. Why did you decide to write it?
Well, as you mentioned, I've been writing for a long time on how to be a more successful leader of your company, and have written in all different aspects of leadership and the challenges that company boards and CEOs face. And as I thought about what did I have to say that could be a unique offering to this audience, as I thought about it, I've had a significant experience with Arthur D. Little, a major international consulting firm, advising large companies on how to think about where they're taking their company. The challenge, if you're a mid-sized or small company, tends to be, okay, I can't hire the McKinseys or BCGs or even me in an earlier life to help me think about the future. What could I do for myself and my leadership team and perhaps my board of directors to think creatively about where I'm going to take the company? So that's the basic idea of this book. How do you actually do that if you're not going to hire a big outside consulting firm to take you through the process?
And Rick, who is the intended audience for this book?
Well, it's a good question since I've spent some time thinking about that. So the basic audience will be CEOs, company owners of, I'm going to say, mid-sized to smaller companies. But I also think that in the end, this book is going will be valuable to consultants to these companies, to coaches, to like the YPO or industry associations where their members are anxious to think about what's the future of their company going to be. I think broadly, that's what the audience will be.
So I'm curious, when you started on this endeavor, did you have any idea how challenging it would be to write a book?
I haven't actually written a book, a standalone book like this before, but I've written many of these large reports and studies. And in a way, this process is similar, except I don't have a large staff helping me write different sections of the book. I've got to write the whole thing myself. So, you know, you go through the process of thinking about what do you actually have to say? What's the table of contents for the book? What's the content of each chapter? How does it all fit together? You're sort of assigning yourself the tasks of getting the whole report done. So that's what I'm actually working on right now.
Are you enjoying the process itself?
I'm enjoying the creative part of it. It's hard work. I do most of my writing in the morning, fairly early morning. I find that my mind is fresh at that point, but it's hard work. But I'm going to get it done and I'm close to finishing it.
Excellent. Well, we'll look forward to it next fall. How did you initially get involved with board work and why was that of interest to you?
As I said, I spent many years as a management consultant working with large companies And I then founded my own company and ran that for a number of years. The company was mostly doing real estate investment and development here in the greater Boston area. And I got asked to join a couple of boards of people who knew of my background and thought, gee, I might be able to help them with the companies they were working on. So I kind of got drawn back into the board of director work, mostly because I was bringing this experience of being a company founder and leader along with the experience of having a consultant to larger organizations on how do they be successful. That combination is what brought me into it.
What do you enjoy most about actually being a board member?
I'm one of these people who likes to think about the big picture. How do all the pieces fit together for this puzzle about how to deal with the challenges of this company? Also, I've always liked the consultant's role. In fact, I think the challenge for me has been the consultant's role is one in which you're dealing with many different clients, and each company is different in its own way. And as opposed to I'm going to be the world's greatest expert on production economics, you're dealing with challenges of a company that might be in the medical technology space versus a bank versus a software development company. You're taking your skills to the different companies and thinking about how can I help them be more successful as a company. So that variety of the challenge is what's interesting to me.
How did the work that you've been doing lead you to the theme of your book, which is the importance of leadership in a business success?
It's a very human process. We tend to think of these big corporations as, well, they're just some big legal entity that's money running around and products coming in and out and production. The truth is they're collections of people working together. So I see this book as a toolbox for helping groups of people work together as a team to identify what their goals are, look at their opportunities, think about barriers to getting there, and then finally making decisions. So this is really a how-to book, drawing on my experience of seeing that the real barriers that companies face is the individuals working together through either individual leadership or the teams to make the entity, which we call a company, successful.
Rick, how did the work that you've been doing lead you to the theme of your book, which, as I understand it, is the importance of leadership in business success?
I guess I'd look at it in a couple of different ways. One is that we think of companies as sort of big, faceless institutions. And in truth, the company is a group of people working together. And in order for groups of people to work together, they have to have effective leadership. I see this book is a workbook, a toolbook for leaders to take themselves and their core advisors and board of directors, leaders of the company, through the process of creating a future for the company.
Rick, switching gears, you've had many experiences with the board of companies and organizations. Are there one or two that stand out as examples where the board made an important positive impact or where the board failed to do its job from which the listeners could learn?
I'll just briefly talk about one of my own experiences. So for a while, I was chairman of the board of a medical device company, and I became board chair. I'd been on the board, but I became board chair at a time when the company was going through the transition from a founder CEO to a non-founder CEO. And my role, and in fact, the role of the board, was to be trusted advisors to the team that had founded the company, particularly the leader, founding leader of the company, who was the CEO. There was also a venture capital firm, which was the primary owner of the company. And there was a core of staff who were very dedicated to the mission of the company. And rather than have, for instance, the owner, the venture capital firm, come in and say, okay, well, we want a new CEO, you're out of here. What was needed for the company was a process that everybody could accept, and particularly the founder, because it was important the founder stay involved with the company, feel good about the process. And what you needed was trust on the part of everybody involved that a fair process was going to be worked through. And that was my role, is to be that builder of trust on the part of everybody involved, be a clear communicator, and sort of shepherd the process through. A huge contribution on the part of the board.
At that time, why do you think the board felt or had the view that the transition was necessary?
This was a case of a very talented individual who had the technical expertise to found the company, but recognized herself over time that she really wasn't the right person to be the CEO, would say that she wasn't the right person to be the CEO. But going from that verbal recognition to actually making it happen was a very, very traumatic for her and for the other founders of the company.
And what role did you yourself end up playing? And why did the transition, presuming it was successful, how did that happen with your role?
Well, I had over, a year, year and a half, gotten to know the founder, the other board members. I knew the VC firm quite well. And one of the issues that kept coming up was the need to do this, but it sort of was never actually happening. And so in discussions among the board and with the primary owner of the company and the founder, it was, okay, well, let's change something to make this actually happen. So I then became, in effect, kind of the facilitator of the process. Anyway, that was the contribution.
So what does that mean in this context, the facilitator? What did you actively do to create a, I think what you called it was a fair process that the founder would be comfortable with?
This is a question about how do you build trust? Well, first of all, you have to be something that everybody involved with this believes that their voice is being heard. So you have to be somebody who's empathetic listener. You have to be somebody who can verbalize in a clear way what the goal is. You have to be somebody who can say, okay, here are the steps we're going to take in a way that is visible to everybody. So it's clear what's actually happening. We ended up doing a search for a new CEO to come on board. So there was then integrating that person into the company and getting acceptance. So this was a new person in a company that had been, this company had been in existence for probably 10 years. So it wasn't a startup situation. So that acceptance of the process, clarity about where you're going, and clear communications was core to getting all this done successfully.
How long had you been on the board before you took the chair?
I'm going to guess a year and a half, something like that.
So in a relatively short time, it sounds like you were able to develop a trust relationship with the founder. How did that happen?
I would say, again, it's being able to listen to what the founder's doing. The founder was an extremely talented technical person. The founder had brought an awful lot into the company to make it successful. And you have to be able to acknowledge that, accept that, and make her and the others feel that, okay, there is a change that's going to happen here. And that change is going to be maybe difficult in some ways, but it's a change that people can say that they accept and they're ready to move on.
Did she take a role after the new CEO came on board?
She stayed involved with the company mostly to support the technology of the company. She also had been a major point of contact with some distributors outside the U.S., so there's sort of a transition for those connections as well.
Did you invite her onto the board?
She was on the board and she stayed on the board for a while and then eventually dropped off the board.
Okay, so she did sit on the board after the new CEO came in for a brief period.
For a while, yes.
Yeah, I think that is, to your credit, a very, very positive thing. I mean, that is great that you found a way to bring the founder in to the point where she was comfortable sitting on the board with the new CEO. I think that's great.
And did the greater board play any role in supporting this transition, or was it one point person or the board chair?
It's interesting as I'm thinking back on it. So yes, we had regular board meetings. We had some special board meetings. I became much more of a communicator of what the board was through the board minutes and that sort of thing as to what the board was saying and concluding. I think the board prior to that had been less, it wasn't closed. It was just, okay, we had the board meeting, let's move on kind of thing. So I instituted a lot more clarity as to terms of what the board was doing, how it communicated its decisions and next steps, that sort of thing.
Rick, you and I have talked about another board experience you had where the board's action didn't work out as well. I'd like you to share that as well, if you would.
I was on this board for quite a long time, almost 10 years, in fact. This was actually a not-for-profit board, but a pretty large organization. I'm not going to name the organization because it's not particularly relevant. This was also a CEO turnover situation in which the CEO for a considerable period of time, I'm going to say 5 or 6 years, something like that, had resigned. And so we did a nationwide search for a new CEO for the company. And we had candidates literally from all over the U.S. and a few from outside the U.S. and search consultants, all of the right sorts of things that you did. And we winnowed it down to about 5 candidates. And in the end, the candidate that the board chose was somebody who was from the Boston area. This is a Boston area organization, had been a player in the same field that this organization was active in. And he had always been a sort of number two guy at several organizations. And he was the one that the board chose. Would not have been my choice, but he in my mind, was in the acceptable last 4 candidates to be considered. So what ended up happening was that over the year, year and a half after he came on board, that he was not able to assume leadership of the organization. The staff was unhappy because he wasn't leading. The staff was unhappy. He was not going out and getting the new revenues and fundraising that he needed to be doing. We ended up actually terminating him after roughly a year and a half.
Well, that is a short period of time. So the board must have came to the conclusion pretty quickly that this was really a bad decision.
Yes, it was a bad decision.
From that experience, what learning comes out in terms of the failure?
Boards, and we talk about them as these are the boards of directors, but the truth is that they are a group of people and they're trying to do good work. They invest a significant amount of their own time. And in a case like this, what I believe happened is that the members of the board basically decided when it came down to who are we actually going to choose, said, we're going to choose the lowest risk candidate, the candidate who was from Massachusetts, the candidate who sort of knew the players in New England, the candidate who had kind of been around the circle. The problem was that this is choosing the low-risk candidate over somebody who was not from this area would be a challenge to the organization, meaning challenging the organization to move forward in an aggressive manner. And I think that groups tend to make low-risk choices. I think that's the challenge you have as a board, is if you, boards are not usually great leaders. It's the CEO who has to be the leader. Not the board. The board is more of a, okay, let's make sure we don't do anything really stupid here. And whereas the CEO has to be the initiator. So in this case where the board had to take the lead, it tended to take the low risk approach. And in the end, that turned out to be the wrong approach.
Were there situations in which you were in a fall subsequently when this experience came to bear and helped you either as the chair of a board or a member of a board guided in a different way than it might have gone otherwise?
It's clarified my thinking about the point I just made, that boards tend to be risk averse. And usually the role that the board versus the CEO plays is that the CEO is one who's take the initiative, move forward, and the board their role tends to be, let's make sure we're not going to do something really crazy here, cautious, et cetera. That tends to be the balancing act that's going on.
But aren't there situations where there are boards that are pretty active and creative and actually help drive the strategic plan?
Yes.
As opposed to just being, you know, passive and taking, I mean, you're making it sound like boards just follow the lead of the chair, and if the chair is not aggressive, then they're complacent, but that isn't always true.
Well, no, that's true. It's not always case. And we're using shorthand ways of talking about this, oversimplifications. But so absolutely. So there are cases in which there are investor expectations that are set. The board represents the shareholders. And the shareholders have set expectations for where the company is supposed to go. And the CEO is not doing that. Then the board will at times step in and say, hey, wait a second. you know, here's what we, representing the shareholders, expect from you, Mr. CEO. You're not doing that. And why not? So, yes, that is absolutely an example of the board taking initiative.
Rick, that segues into the idea of culture, where culture eats strategy for breakfast. Does that tend to be true for boards as well? And how do you build strong elements of a board culture?
Okay, well, I am in complete agreement with your statement that culture beats strategy all the time. Absolutely does. And this has a lot to do with both culture and leadership, because the culture that you have on a board has to come from the leadership of the board. If it's a CEO who's a chairman, or if it's non-CEO chairman, that leader has to set cultural expectations. So it has to be expectations for openness, trust, willingness to actually engage in difficult conversations. That's where the culture part of it comes in. And
so in a board, how do you make sure to develop these elements into the culture?
Either the principal owner who is controlling the board or the CEO has to set the culture. It can't come from just sort of a person on the board. To simplify this, just assume it's the CEO who is the leader in some form or another. The CEO is then saying, okay, I'm going to bring my really tough problems to the board. I really want to hear what you have to say. I'm not having this board meeting just to tell you what to do and then we'll all go have a dinner together. I'm really bringing to you the difficult challenges for this organization, and I want you as a resource to me to help us work through where we're taking this company. That's the leadership that the CEO has to bring to the board.
We've talked about how important it is for a CEO to be transparent with a board and to bring challenges to the board. What does the board need to do in response? And as the chair of a board, what is that person's responsibility to make sure that the board, if you will, responds in kind to that kind of action on the CEO?
This is a more generalized question about how do you deal with any challenges that come before the board. And what I would say is, okay, what the board is doing is saying, what is the goals that we're trying to achieve here in addressing this challenge, whatever it is? I mean, it could be that somebody's made an offer to buy the company. That could be the thing. Could be the question that's on the table. What's the goal that we as a board are trying to achieve through the company consistent with the goals that we're trying to achieve? What are the different ways we could achieve the financial goals, for instance? If we have to put this into a committee, we'll ask the committee to go away and come up with options and then come back to the full board. And then we as a full board can make a final decision on which way to go.
So one of the things we've talked about in the past is the fact that most board members don't spend a lot of time together. I mean, maybe they meet 4 times a year, maybe there's a special meeting here and there. So they're, what I think a phrase you used, they're infrequent collaborators. What does a board chair need to do to make sure they become effective at collaborating with one another?
Part of it is they spend more time together. So this is often why people will say, okay, we're having our board meeting, we're going to get together the night before and have dinner together, or spend more time together just when you're not having the board meeting, so people feel more of a connection. Committee work is very important. So instead of saying, okay, well, you know, bring whatever issue to the board, we'll discuss it and take a vote, and then that's it. Say, okay, well, this is really worth more of a conversation. We're going to have the audit committee or the strategy committee or the compensation committee. You guys go off and work on this for a while and come back with recommendations to the board. So you're then getting people to say, okay, it's not our quarterly board meeting. These guys are going to go off and work with each other on some problem. That's how you get people to start working with each other.
So find opportunities to give board members a voice. Is that fair?
Absolutely. And give them both a voice and a task. Give them a role.
But how does a board member balance between being a team player with the obligation to be honest and direct, raising the issues that may be uncomfortable, or challenging proposal from the chair or the CEO?
It's one of the challenges to being an effective board member. Boards and groups like this tend to operate through consensus or rough consensus. So you're trying to find consensus where you can. And you're also, at the same time, need to be able to speak honestly and openly about what your feelings, your situations are. I can just share you another experience I had, and it had to do with a proposal that was brought before the board about buying a quite substantial property, a piece of real estate that I happened to know something about. The CEO kept bringing before the board, well, we're about to do this. We're thinking about it. It's going to happen some way down the road. And I knew that there were some significant problems with this property that I kept sort of mentioning, hoping that the CEO would look at this more carefully. And it's clear the CEO wasn't doing that. At the point when the CEO actually brought to the board for approval, I said, well, wait a second. I just want to be clear in the minutes of this meeting that I'm going to vote against this, and I'm going to want in the minutes of the meeting why I'm voting against this. And that actually stopped the process and got the CEO for the first time to go back and look at the problems with this property that I had identified. So at some point, you have to be willing to, in a constructive way, I don't mean a hostile or accusatory way, put the real information that you have or the concerns you have on the table in a way that's going to have real impact.
It sounds to me like in that situation, you were being the ideal board member. If a board member is not going to raise issues or concerns that he or she has, then what is the point of being on the board? Let me raise another question with you. So we've talked about for years, it's been considered good practice for boards of private companies to have executive sessions without the CEO so they can talk candidly. I've recently heard some pushback on that to the effect that, well, maybe the culture needs to be stronger so that the CEO can be in the room and the board actually has the guts or has the, you know, is comfortable, if you will, actually expressing their concerns while the CEO is there. What do you think about that?
I am a very strong believer in executive sessions. I know you and I've had this conversation before, and I've seen cases where, in my mind, the board meeting didn't start until the CEO left the room. Not that that's what the agenda showed, but in truth, that's what actually happened. I think there's both. I think the board has to be willing to have open conversations with the CEO while the CEO is president, but it's just a normal human dynamics that people feel more comfortable. And I don't mean that the executive session is about saying something negative about the board. It may have nothing to do with the CEO at all. It may just be that the board members feel more comfortable talking about themselves and what they're feeling when the CEO's out of the room. It's not that the board meeting is where the CEO gets criticized. It's usually not that. That's usually not what's happening. It's more that there's a more freewheeling conversation about how do we really feel about whatever the issue is. It may have nothing to do with the CEO. And then you find out that that dialogue within the board then can get condensed down into some specific communications with the CEO, not about the CEO himself or herself, but about actions that the board feels the CEO should be taking.
You know, that makes sense. Rick, it's been great speaking with you. Thanks for joining us. Again, everyone, please check out Rick's website at williamsadvisorypartners.com and make sure to buy his book next September. It's called Create the Future for Your Company and Yourself. And thanks to everyone for listening to On Boards with our guest, Rick Williams. Take care, Razo.
You too, Joe.
Thanks an awful lot. It's been great talking with you guys.
Thanks, Rick. Take care.